Judges 3, let's have a think about Ehud. Well, Ehud was left-handed, and this continues a theme that you find throughout the Judges, that all these judges had, for the most part, something non-standard and weak about them. In his case, he was left-handed. And in the Septuagint in Judges 5, you see that Jael was also left-handed in the Septuagint of Judges 5:26. And God used the left-handed to give David victory in 1 Chronicles 12. Then again in Judges 20, left-handed people are used to win a victory. Well, left-handed people were seen as somehow weird, strange, something odd, possibly demon-possessed, etc. Well, in Albania, in the 20th century, you couldn't be a civil servant, you couldn't work for the government if you were left-handed. And in a lot of primitive societies, and as I say, that extended to Europe, even in the 20th century in Albania, in a lot of primitive societies it was the same. The left-handed were seen as weird. They were seen as strange. Something was the matter with them. And it's exactly those kind of peripheral outsider people whom God seems to love to use. And so that is you and me. This is typical of how God works. It's not that he will only work with those who are perfectly qualified for the job that he wants them to do. In fact, he uses the opposite. As I often say, it is our inadequacy which is our adequacy. That is our qualification. It is the lack of qualification which qualifies you for the job in God's sight. And this is typical. Just read all through the scriptures and you see this. Moses had a stutter. So he was used as God's spokesman to Pharaoh. Paul had a thorn in the flesh. His bodily presence was weak, his speech contemptible. And yet he was used. This is how it is. And thinking of Paul, he was used as the apostle to the Gentiles when he was really, you would say, better suited to preach to the Jews, to intellectual rabbinic-trained Jews like himself, but he was sent to the Gentiles. And Peter, who was mocked as unlearned and ignorant, agrammatos, without basic education and without basic grammar, if you like, he was used to preach to the Jerusalem intelligentsia and baptize 3,000 of them. So this is typical of how he works. And this is emphasized here in verse 21. Ehud put forth his left hand and took the sword from his right thigh, thrust it into Eglon's body. It's stressed that he uses his left hand. Presumably he was sort of grasping the king, about to whisper in his ear a message from God, and perhaps he did give him a message from God, as he stabbed him to death. Well, all the time you get the impression that Ehud was acting alone. He sent away the people who carried the tribute, verse 18, and he gets on with this assassination totally alone. We get the impression that Israel generally were extremely weak at this time and that Ehud really was a loner. 19. He himself turned back from the idols, or the quarries, the AV says, but the idea really is the idols. He himself turned back from the idols that were by Gilgal to go back and kill the king, Eglon. So he himself turned back from the idols. I think the implication is really that his brethren were happy to remain there with the idols, and he didn't, it seems, tell anybody what he was doing. And again, 26, Ehud escaped while they waited and passed beyond the idols and escaped. This is a very daring, single-handed assassination that could have really easily gone wrong. And it reflects a very deep faith within Ehud. And I think the impression you get is of a man acting completely alone and not supported by his brethren. Now this, I think, is what really indicates spirituality and commitment. If you act for God in the way that you do when your brethren are not up to it. You see this, I think, particularly with Daniel and his friends when they were in captivity, that the rest of the young men from Judah went along, I guess, with eating the king's meat that had been offered to idols, and yet he showed his personal conscience. I think when you are surrounded by your brethren who are going in a way that is maybe not good or is not the ideal standard of serving God, or in this case in Judges, just simply accepting the status quo, and you are different. You say, no, I'm not doing that, or no, I'm going to do this, and you don't agree, but I'm going to do this. This, I think, indicates your real personal persuasion and commitment, and I believe that there are times in the lives of all of us where we are called to stand apart from our brethren. I don't mean that in terms of division, of pushing off, getting the huff, or saying, yeah, you're not good enough, like Elijah, you know, I'm the only one who's left. No, because then you have to be reminded that there are 7,000 also who have not bowed the knee to Baal, and it's not only you, you are not only the only one left, as it were, in the midst of apostasy. But I'm not talking about that sort of thing, but I'm talking about having to be different, even from your brethren. This is, I think, particularly the case in supporting church policies which are wrong, especially when it comes to cutting off other people. There are times when one has got to stand alone, and the world at that immediate moment in time then suddenly becomes a very lonely and a very friendless place. But I do think, as I say, that you see this as a theme in the lives of so many of God's children, and I believe that it continues today.